Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome to the Patrice Brantley Show, where helping others is the name of this game. And on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Ms. Courtney Frazier, who's going to share her amazing story of having a tragedy happen to her, moving in the process to this triumph. What I love about her story is her story is in the midst. It's in the process. It is happening now, and we're in the middle of it. This is wonderful. Let's welcome Ms. Courtney, y'all. And here's the great piece about it. As she talks about it, it's definitely going to touch you. So welcome, Ms. Courtney.
Thank you.
Share with us your story. What happened?
So when I was 3, I was hiking in a local park with my parents. It was a few days before my 4th birthday, back in 1988. And toward the end of the hike, a dead tree fell on my head.
You said a dead tree fell on your head?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead. Talk to me a little more. What happened after?
So then they took me to the local hospital. And that hospital sent me home saying, like, they just thought the tree just grazed me or just cut my temple. They didn't notice anything totally wrong. So they sent me home and told my parents to keep an eye on me for the next 48 hours.
So here you are, this dead tree has hit you on the head. Your parents take you to the hospital looking for the appropriate care. The hospital says the tree just grazed you. You're okay. Go ahead, go home. They remind mom and dad, hey, make sure you keep an eye on them.
Yeah. And then within 24 hours, like, they couldn't wake me up. And so they had to take me to Children's in D.C. And there I was diagnosed by the neurosurgeon with a subdural hematoma, which is bleeding inside the brain.
Wow. So wait a minute. We went from walking with our parents in the park on a hike. So within not even 48 hours, now you are literally here with bleeding on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Take us through what happened in this area. Wow.
And then that neurosurgeon also told my parents that up to that point in his career, I was the closest patient he had to death. Like, when he opened up my brain to, like, do the surgery and take care of the bleeding. So I was actually in the hospital on my birthday that year.
Wow.
So.
I'm speechless, y'all. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, honestly, like, I got my birthday presents in the hospital that year, which no kid wants to be in the hospital on their birthday or during the holidays. Mm-hmm. And now for a few years now, I've been on Osborne Books, and more independent consultant. And I try to do book drives every year around the holidays for Children's in D.C., so that they can have new books for the children that are during the holidays.
So you literally took that one experience of being in the hospital at 4 and have now taken this, and you're making that a purpose every year. You give back to the kids and give books so that they're not lonely during the holidays or on their birthdays. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Take me a little bit deeper after we get out of this, because the surgeon has now opened up your brain. They've now seen, he's basically told your parents and pretty much signed a death certificate over you saying that this is, you know, you're closest to death that he has seen. And what happens here? So after 4, what happens?
So they did the surgery. I don't know how long it took because I was the one going under it. Mm-hmm. And I came out, and then all of a sudden, like, I was getting presents from, like, from family members. This was from my grandparents.
Oh, wow.
They found it at the gift shop at Children's Hospital in D.C. And it doesn't look so big now, but as a kid, it looked huge to me. So I called him Big Purple Bear.
The Big Purple Bear. I'm going to deeper in the
bed. Because as a kid, as a 4-year-old, it looked huge. And I'm like trying to carry this teddy bear. So, and now I sleep with him every night. And then after that, I had eye surgery because my eyes, I had cross eyes.
Mm-hmm. So this was all a result of the actual tree hitting you? You ended up having swelling and cross on the eye.
I had a learning disability before that, but like it honestly got worse after the accident.
Okay, so we went from being a child with special needs or having a learning disability to now this this particular learning concern has now worsened due to this head trauma.
Yeah, and then so I have a traumatic brain injury. Now I deal with post-traumatic stress disorder from it too. And then I switched to elementary schools in second grade and I got made fun of for the way I talk because I talk differently.
So let me go back. So you're in a space before this happened, you were a child with special needs. You had this traumatic experience happen where the tree fell on you. And then after the tree fell on you, it caused so many other concerns or effects for you as far as brain damage, as you spoke about, swelling on the brain, cross the eyes, and it caused you to have issues in your speech. And then you were expected to go back to a regular classroom, to a regular school with all of this?
Well, from kindergarten through first grade, I was in a different elementary school.
Okay.
And my family and I had to learn American Sign Language because I wasn't speaking at all. And then in second grade, I guess my parents thought it was good enough to go to the local, the closer elementary school, the one we live closer to. And so I switched to elementary schools. I had no say in it. It was just, my parents were like, okay, you're going to the the home elementary school, the one that we're live close to. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting made fun of for the way I talked by boys there. And this was from second grade through fifth grade because middle school starts here in Maryland in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. So second through fifth, my first year of fifth grade, I was made fun of for the way I talked at school. And then I'd come home and my family would make fun of me saying words wrong too. So
wait a minute. Not only have you experienced this trauma, you're now being teased for your trauma, which has to be hard to deal with. And then at that, this is happening all in childhood, which childhood by itself is difficult enough.
Yeah.
And you get here and you have this happening at school and then at home. Where was your safe space at this point? Because I mean, this
happened. I felt like there was no safe space. I mean, yeah, we went to church on Sundays, but I didn't want to speak at church because of the experiences at school and at home. And I was just whenever I tried to speak up for myself, it didn't work. So I was just like, okay, nobody's going to listen to my voice anyways. Nobody cares. My voice doesn't matter. So I just went inward and kept everything to myself.
So literally you went from being a child who had a voice to becoming voiceless.
Yeah.
Wow, what a feeling. That to me, I can totally relate, but for different reasons. But wow, just to be that child that felt like your voice didn't matter or wasn't even heard. How did this work? So once you got into this new school, did they have you placed into a classroom that you felt was beneficial to you?
I was just in with my regular classmates. I was special ed, but I was, because in elementary school here, you get taken out for the special services. So I couldn't even stay in the classroom and learn everything with my classmates. I had to be taken out for speech therapy. I had to be taken out for physical therapy, for occupational therapy. So and then they do these psych evals every year. And I'd be taken out for that. So I never really got a whole day of learning in the classroom. And that, honestly, I'd be below grade level on every subject because I wasn't getting all the teaching that I was, that everybody else was getting. So I went from like being a normal kid to being a kid with like, what am I doing? Like, not knowing, like, and needing, not just needing accommodations, but being pulled out to get some of those accommodations.
So what I can imagine just hearing you say this is that it felt like no matter what was going on, you didn't even get a chance to be a part of the experience.
Right.
To get connected, to feel that you belong. And then when you're talking about these psych evals, I'm going to use the wording that I know, for the IEPs that you were doing, that's the individual education plan,
yeah,
that they were working with you in the school. I know that every year parents, at least here in Florida, I know every year that parents and the students and the staff come together to work on that. Were those plans beneficial for you? Now that you're looking back, did you feel those plans were beneficial for you?
I think so, because like, honestly, most kids in math here like can't have a calculator, can't, like, they have to do everything in their head. But like, that was one of my accommodations. I could use a calculator if I needed it to help me get through the math tests. And like, I got extended time. I got like different, like, I could be taken out to a different location to do the test instead of, so I can have the extended time and not feel rushed and get it done on the time everybody else had to get it done on. But in middle school, we technically were supposed to go to the IEP meetings and speak for ourselves. And I went to one of them, but the teachers didn't seem to be listening to me or anything. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to let my parents do it from now on. Like, I'm not going to go to these meetings and feel like I'm not being listened to when this meeting is about me.
So
and my needs.
You were basically thrown back into this again to feel like you were not being heard.
Right.
So in middle school, and this is, I'm glad you brought that up, because in middle school, I know when people speak about these IEPs, depending on the state, you are asked to be your own advocate. And I think this is an amazing thing that it happened to you so young, because you later took that advocacy of being your advocate in your own educational process from the IEP meetings to later being an advocate in other respects. We're going to talk about that in a minute too. So how did it work and how far did you go in education?
I actually graduated high school, even though teachers were saying like that I would never graduate high school. I got a 2-year college degree and I got a 4-year college degree. Whoa. At my 4-year college, the head of the disability support services department said maybe a 3-year degree is best for you.
Wow.
And I was like, here I go again, being told what's best for me, what I can't do, like, because that's what a lot of us in the disability and other abled community are told. Like, all we are told is what we can't do. We are hardly ever told what's possible for us or what we can do, or that we are capable and like everybody else.
I love that you bring this up, because you bring up a valid point. People love to tell you what you can't do. And it's so easy to tell somebody what they can't do, but why not tell me what I can do? And I love that, because that is a part of who you are as an advocate in the area of mental health. As one of the effects of the trauma that you had when you were younger, mental health is one of the effects that you see now that's still there. How are you working on being that advocate in that avenue for yourself?
Well, honestly, in ninth grade, like, because in eighth grade, I was diagnosed with epilepsy. So at the end of eighth grade, so then I was being, had to get, not only get used to high school, but I had to get used to a new diagnosis of epilepsy and taking meds and, you know, all like everything that comes with that. And like, how to, like, who to tell, who not to tell, like, I kept going, like, and then honestly, it was a tough transition because it was two transitions in one, in a sense, you know? And then, like, so I, three times I told staff at my school, I want to hurt myself, or I want to kill myself.
Was this happening due to the medication that you were taking at the time, or were you truly suicidal?
I just didn't know how else to voice the pain inside of me. And they literally threatened me if I said it again, and if I didn't go to therapy, then I would not graduate from that high school.
So in a space that you were calling out for help, yet again, you had people saying to you, you're voiceless. And what I find interesting in your story is several times people are telling you you're voiceless, and today you've taken all of that feeling of being voiceless and having people tell you that you're voiceless and that your voice doesn't matter, and you're speaking out, sharing your story, telling people that just because I had a trauma, just because I had a traumatic brain injury, just because I'm dealing with mental health does not mean that my voice doesn't count.
Right.
It is amazing to hear that.
And then, and then I, in college, I went to a counselor as it was approaching the 10-year anniversary of my grandpa's death, my dad's dad, who also baptized me, it turns out. I didn't, like, so my grandpa baptized me as an infant. And it was approaching that 10-year anniversary, and the school counseling office had a table one day and had a form, and they said, you're borderline anxiety disorder, borderline depressed. And I was like, oh my gosh, maybe I should get help. Like, maybe I need more help than I realized. And I went and I started with the counselor I got was a guy, and obviously with my history with being bullied by boys and guys, like, I couldn't fully open up to him.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel comfortable opening up to him completely. So then, again, like, I just kept to myself a lot. And then I would journal from time to time and then write poetry. But then late last year, one of my friends from a coaching program I joined, I saw that she was a therapist, and I reached out to her. I said, I need to, like, and she saw me on one of her programs, and she's like, maybe you need more help than you, like, you need help. And I'm like, yeah, I do. And then she's the one that started me in the direction of using my voice, my spoken voice, and saying, your voice does matter. You are needed. And like, that just like after all these years of thinking I didn't matter and my voice didn't matter, like, having her say that was like, what? Like, you mean I do have a voice and it matters? Like, people want to hear it? Like, and because it's so hard to break those old beliefs about yourself and everything you've believed your whole life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we worked so long, and then August of this year, actually starting in July of this year, I started getting really low and not wanting to be here. But it was approaching the 1-year anniversary of my mom's dad's death, and I never, like, because of COVID, I never got to go to the funeral. I never got to say bye to him. I never had any kind of closure with him. And then in August, it was approaching the funeral service of my dad's mom. And like, it just got worse, like, downward spiral, in a sense.
Yeah.
Like, and for the first time in my life, I actually made a plan to take my own life.
So wait a minute. You went from a space where you had to first find the right counselor to get over the old traumas of being bullied. And then once you found the right counselor, this counselor finally said, you have a voice, you are needed. And then after you had this triumphant moment of saying, yes, my voice is needed, I'm ready to go, I want to talk about this, you got to a space where the grief, the unresolved mental health and the grief came back up and snuck back up again.
Yeah.
And this time with the grief showing up, it literally brought the cousin of suicide with it. And this mm-hmm. time you got to the point you were further along where you said, I wanted to make a plan.
And then not only that, but I wrote two sentences of a suicide note in August. And I was just, but I couldn't get past two sentences. I'm like, okay, maybe I really don't want to do this yet. But then September came along and it was approaching the 2-year anniversary of a friend's death by suicide. Mm-hmm. And he committed suicide September 30th. So I was, so September, not like, and then September 8th, I got into an argument with my dad. And he said something that, like, he shouldn't have said, he realizes now he shouldn't have said that. He was just saying, think safety. But instead, he said, go get yourself killed.
So let me go back for a second. Here you are in a fragile state. And sometimes people will say things and don't realize they shouldn't have said it. And it took you to this point. How did you come back? Because to me, this is something that is just, to me, listening to it on this side, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, who would say such a thing? But
that's not the first time he said something like that in an argument. He said that in August too, like something, he said, go kill yourself, like in August during an argument. Like, and both times he didn't realize where I was at, because in my family growing up, we never shared all our emotions or how we were feeling with each other. So like, of course I wouldn't like tell him this is what I'm dealing with.
So you literally were in a space that as you're talking about this, he doesn't know what's going on with you emotionally.
Right.
So I want to go back a little bit. You've gotten to the point, you've reached out for help. What was that experience? Because you had made this plan, you had gotten yourself in this mindset. What was it like to reach out for help? This is now, I believe, and what our discussion is, this is now like the second or third time you've reached out for help. And I applaud you. I'm so happy and overjoyed that you reached out for the help.
Well, September 9th, the therapist reached out to me saying something was brought to her attention. And I had a feeling what it was, honestly, mm-hmm. and that she wanted to cover it. We were not going to do a therapy session that day. We were going to do a regular health appointment too with that day instead. But I knew this was pressing because I knew what I was planning on doing 2 days later. Which was overdosing on pills and ending it. So I finally, like during that appointment, I told her the truth. I said to her, this is what I'm planning on doing. And then we got off and she researched what can be done for those, like, because she looks at how my dad treats me as emotional abuse. And she wanted to see what's done in my area because she lives in North Carolina, so she had to do research for those adults with disabilities that are being abused. And she came back on with me and said, there's not a lot that they do in your area, and that makes me disappointed and upset. But there is this crisis center that we can call, and you can go to the hospital and get extra help. And I said to her, like, at first I said, can we just wait till Saturday? Because I didn't want, like, I guess at that time, I didn't want to admit I was that close, you know? I don't want to admit it to myself. But then I said to her, like, then she asked, do you want? Then I backed out and I said, actually do it today. She's like, do you want me to do it or are you going to do it? And she asked me 5 times and I said, you do it. And so then I was here in my room waiting for the crisis center mobile team to come to my house, my parents' house, and talk to me. And at first it was just the mobile crisis team with cops. And then the cops reared in for an ambulance to take me to the hospital. And when at the hospital, like I didn't get to my room at the behavioral unit until 3 a.m. that night. And then the next night I had a breakthrough seizure because I was off of my seizure meds since May 2017 because I had not had a seizure since 2004. And then I was sent home back to the behavioral unit at 3 a.m. that night again. And then on the 12th, I had another breakthrough seizure. So I was sent to the medical part of the hospital and they kept me. I was supposed to be released from the medical back to the behavioral on the 15th of September, but I woke up on the 15th with a confusion spell. So they wanted to keep me one more night because they had me on one seizure med that can cause confusion. So they took me off of that and they wanted to make sure I didn't have another problem. So then I was discharged on the 16th and got back to the behavioral unit. And then I was discharged totally on the 20th of September, which so happened to be my half birthday. So
in this process, there was a lot of back and forth because of the health that you were dealing with,
yeah,
with the seizures and stuff. But I'm so happy to see that you, first of all, I'm overjoyed that you felt comfortable enough to share with your therapist how you really felt. And this goes to show, and I'm going to shout out your therapist. I don't know her or him. I don't want to leave their names out here at this present moment, but I just want to shout them out because you felt brave enough to share with them how you felt. And then also they knew you enough to say, hey, what's going on? Let's really talk about this. Let's work this out. And that goes to show that an amazing therapist, when you have a good therapist, you can trust them and know that they really have your best interest at heart. So I just want to take a minute to just shout out that therapist who did such an amazing job. And then also for you, for really saying, I need help and stepping out and really getting the help that you needed. I mean, this is amazing. I mean, right now you've taken us through your story. You've talked about how it has affected you. You talked about the effects and the traumas that had happened, effects of the trauma, excuse me, that have happened. And now that you're out and you're here on your own, how are you managing every day?
Well, honestly, getting used to taking seizure meds again is not easy because I was literally starting in the summer, I was counting down the days till it was May 2022, which would have been the 5-year mark. No meds and no seizures, and that was the mark that they were targeting to say that I no longer had epilepsy. So honestly, I was disappointed, and a new thought came in my mind like several times that like, what if I didn't take the meds for just one day to see what happened? I would never do that because like there was one time at the beginning of my journey that I did not take it like unintentionally, missed the whole day of meds and I had a seizure that day. And I'd rather take the meds and be tired all day instead of having a seizure. So like you have to balance it. And it was definitely hard because like getting used to the meds part again and like how tired they make you feel. Like I was feeling tired all day every day before the meds anyways, but these make me even more tired. I didn't even take them yet this morning because I knew I was coming on here and I didn't want to be sleepy during the interview.
Gotcha.
And they literally I get up at around 7:30 every day. And within 3 hours, I have to lay back down. because I'm so tired because of the meds.
So I'm going to kind of wrap us up a little bit. Miss Courtney will be coming back. We're going to be doing some behind the scenes work with us. So I'm excited about this because I just really want to talk about this. So do you have any last words that you want to share with anyone who is dealing with some mental health concerns?
Yes, you're not alone. You really aren't. I just saw a post from one of my friends this morning that said she was feeling depressed. And like she said that on her post too, that you're not alone. And that just like motivated me even more. Like we need to get this out there. Like we need to share our stories. We need to show who we are, both the good and the bad. Because social media, normally all you see is the good parts of people. Like the happy, but there's those, they could be dealing with stuff you don't know about. Yes. And we need to get to that point where we feel comfortable sharing our not so good parts. And I have been sharing a lot more about my story, and I know my story matters. Like it could save other, like your story can save other people's lives. Like I published 2 books of poetry, and I'm working on publishing a 3rd one, and we're going to make a box set out of it because they all have the word dreams somewhere in the title.
Yes.
I don't know, somehow, I don't know how, like, the first book I just called Dreams Do Come True. Then the 2nd one was Olympic Dreams. The 3rd one is going to be called Dreams Realized. So, like, I just, somehow, like, it is, that roar just popped in my head. And, like, and just confirmations that I got, like, at a ribbon cutting at my 4-year college, they, of a new residence hall, they, the dean of the chapel actually said, each building on campus has a story, was built for a reason, and is a dream realized. And I was like, what? Like, you know, like, just gain those confirmations like that. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, I am on the right path. I am doing what I'm meant to do. Like, because at your lowest points, you don't realize the support system you have. You don't realize like that you are needed, that you matter, and that you like your story needs to be shared. Wow. You just care about surviving day-to-day life.
I couldn't end off on such a better terms. We literally heard from Miss Courtney today to share with us her trauma, the cousins that were connected to her trauma, and how at the end of her story, she had a triumph. I don't know if y'all heard this, but I mean, to hear her talk about going from being the baby in the bed with a bleeding brain, swelling on the brain and bleeding, to a 4-year graduate college student who is now not just a graduate, but an advocate for children for special needs, with special needs, and a mental health advocate. And what I love about it is she all did it while she was being herself. So I want to thank you again, once again, Miss Courtney, for coming on. And y'all know how this goes. Let's go out and be great because we are great and our greatness is now. It no longer awaits. I want to thank you all for joining the Patrice Brantley Show, where helping others is the name of the game. And where on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the #1 independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.